Welcome to Psychic Babes. I'm your host, Kirsten Sandifer. Today we have an exciting guest on. His name is Stephen Strong. He's an Australian-based researcher, and he's an author and a former high school teacher. He has a background in archaeology. He is involved in the formation of a graduate diploma of Aboriginal education for the NSW Department of Education. And he also co-authored the highly successful Aboriginal Australia Language and Cultural Kit and has written over a dozen articles on original history and lore for the National Indigenous Times. He's a researcher, historian, and an author with a bachelor's degree in social science, and he majored in psychology and archaeology and anthropology. And he has about 30 years of contact with the original Gamilaroi people and tribes of the Bundjalung Language Federation and the benefit of extensive consultation with many of the original Aboriginal elders. Steve and his son Evan's work is to reveal the ancient story of the original people, and this information has pretty much been lost to most of the Western civilization. So he's going to talk a little bit about the Ascension, what it means, what the elders have told him, what's going on, give us a little bit of a timeline about that, and he's also going to reveal to you and show, for those of you who are watching this on the podcast, some of his pieces that he has. He has rings and rocks and things like that, and skulls of Palladian beings, and he has rings that are from Rings of Atlantis. He has one of the original three, so these are highly magical and very, very rare items that he has in his possession. So very excited to have him on. He's been on Graham Hancock and many other talk shows around the world. So welcome, Stephen.
Okay. All right. Okay. Look, to begin with, I'm a teacher. I was involved in teaching original studies in New South Wales. I helped write the curriculum for New South Wales with quite a few other people. And I taught Aboriginal studies in high school. And as I taught the studies, I taught the course that I helped write, I realized as I won the trust of the children and the elders in the community I was in, which was in Moree, I began to realize that what I was teaching the kids was wrong. So what I did is I went back to the Department of Education, tried to explain that we had to rewrite the curriculum and rewrite the course because I've been told basically everything we're teaching was wrong. And lo and behold, they didn't want to listen to me, so I left teaching. Decided to actually write some books, which was an economically disastrous choice. And that set us on a path we've been on for the last 10 years. And what's basically happened is, see, I'm an original person, so that does give me a slight advantage. Over the last 10 years, we've gone on to country all over Australia at the elder request. We don't go on to country unless we're asked to go on to country. Most archaeologists decide where they want to go and then tell people they're coming. We sit here and wait to be asked, so we approach this differently. We do this proper old way, original way. When original people went on to someone else's country, they would let someone know they were coming and wait to be asked. So we do it the same. So primarily, we've been doing
with that. I think that's the polite and kind of way people should do things altogether in life. But that's interesting.
Yeah, well, that's how this started. And in the last 10 years, I've been and Evan, we've probably done 60, 70 sites. We've been all over the country, and we're now at a stage now where we've got a list of places to get to, and we just can't get to them. So we get there when we can. And to be honest, I'm not that keen on going out in country. I've been doing it for 10 years. I'm 67, and I'm feeling like sometimes I don't want to climb up cliffs anymore. But I've told my wife for the last 2 years I'll never go back on country, but that's rubbish. I just keep going back anyway, so I can't get away from it. So primarily that's what takes place. And because elders keep contacting.
Now, how did you... Yeah. So how did you start really getting the trust of the elders so they started telling you kind of the secrets of the ways of the world and things at that?
I think that came about to an extent. We wrote three books for University Press of America, and some elders read the books, and then they contacted us as a result of that. So to begin with, it was more the books we wrote, which were more academic, and elders read that and felt we were coming from the right place, and then they started contacting us. One group in particular, which is the Ramangeri, which is a group that, well, their island's been basically burnt to the crisp. It's Kangaroo Island, the whole island's been burnt. They contacted us first and gave us, I went down there for 7 days, and then they finally decided to give me ceremony. Then they gave me a role, and that role is called Wiritjin, which is Blackfella, Whitefella Dreaming. So I started from that, that group, my main group. I've worked with many others, but I always go back and answer to the Ramangeri because they were the first ones to give me ceremony. Mm-hmm. I've had about four more from other elders in other places. And that ceremony gives me the right to go on to places when I'm welcome like that. That gives me the right to keep doing what we're doing. So all of this is done not as an academic, but as an interlocutor between academia and original culture. And my job is basically when I go on site, the elders show me what it is they want. They give me the answer, which is really easy. And then I figure out the questions and then I present that elsewhere. So my job is basically to present not an academic story, but the elders' story, because they are the keepers, the indigenous people.
They are. They've taken care of us for so many years and people don't really realize. You know, and the way we've treated them is absolutely horrible. But the same with the Native Americans here. I mean, they're the keepers of our history as well. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, that's a whole nother issue. But it's, how do you have to be of descent, of Aboriginal descent, in order to be able to be invited into these initiations?
Absolutely not.
That's interesting.
Proper old way doesn't judge you on skin. It judges you on intent and action. When I was given ceremony by the Ramangeri, I never made an issue of my Aboriginality because I don't look that Aboriginal at all, to be honest.
Right.
And I never told anyone publicly that I was Aboriginal until we had death threats from Aboriginal people saying, what gives you a white fella the right to say this? And I don't respect those sort of people because
I don't either, yeah.
My elders have told me, the one that's my main elder told me, spirit knows no colour. And yes. I go by that every day. It's to do with the intent. Some of the most original people I've met in Australia are white. And some of the most non-original people in Australia are black. It's got nothing to do with colour. It's got everything to do with intention. So, no, I was taken on, and many of these elders had no idea I wasn't original. When I was given ceremony, it wasn't an issue for them.
Yeah.
What they wanted to know is, where was I coming from? What's my intentions? Evan's intentions.
Where was your heart at? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it's not a problem. Proper elders, custodians of the old way, we want to share. So, no, not a problem. You can be white. You can be black. You can be any color you want. This is not a color thing anymore. This is a culture thing.
Well, I think so many people, you know, have read these books that are actually works of fiction and taken them as works of, you know, of actual of things that have happened. That works. They're works of fiction, basically, of walkabouts with the elders. That I can't remember the name of that book. I don't know if you know.
Yeah, I know the book. Talking about, I know well, and it caused a lot of grief up here.
Yeah.
Stephen Segal, who came out here and sided with the original people and attacked the people who did that. That was a fictitious account and it was a pack of lies. But look, the point with that is, within that, there was still respect for the original people in our culture, but unfortunately, it wasn't done the right way. But you know, it's water off a duck's back because a lot of bad things are said about original people. A lot of bad things have happened to us. I mean, if we worry about that, we'll never get out of the trouble.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I like your outlook. Now, what have the elders said to you? And I'm sure you've probably been privy to knowledge coming through about the ascension and what's going on right now. And because when I spoke with a friend of mine, Errol Lawrence, who is an Aboriginal elder, he said nobody's worried right now. Everybody's in peace. And I've heard a couple different things, you know, back and forth from different people about it, but that kind of makes sense to me a little bit, because if it were the end days were coming, they would be in peace because they know it's part of the cycle and they accept it. Mm. But I'm wondering what your thoughts are.
Well, they're not my thoughts, to be honest, because they're the thoughts of people who've rung me and spoken to me. Mm-hmm. We actually, when we meet a new elder and they ring us, I always start by trying to work out, because a lot of people can claim to be an elder.
Right.
Anyone can claim it, man. You can claim anything on this planet and you can lie through your teeth and get away with it.
The internet these days.
I was asking the same thing. Tell me about the change. Now, I haven't had an elder that knows this stuff that won't say exactly the same story I've heard for the last 2 years. Now, I've got to make a point about this. I actually don't look like putting time scales on anything, but it's pretty hard not to when I keep getting told certain things. But quite simply, the story I've been told time after time after time is incredibly consistent, whether it comes from Victoria, whether it comes from the Kimberley, whether it comes from the middle, whether it comes from the East Coast. There's an incredible consistency where the elders tell me things and they have no idea what I've been told by others, and it's just the same story with very little variation. And it goes a lot like this. I remember about 2 years ago when I got the first phone call from Brendan Murray down in Victoria, who's a very well-respected elder of a keeper of Old Way, and he told me there's a change coming. I said to Brendan, oh, not again, mate. I've heard that so many times. No. He said, we've never made this claim before. All the other times when people have made prophecies, we've shut up.
Yeah,
this is our prophecy, not theirs. And it goes like this. I spoke to a woman who was at the meeting when this took place. Mm-hmm. It was based around the reunification or the reuniting of the seven sisters from the Pleiades in incarnated form, and that took place about a year and a half ago. And I got the information from a person who was at that meeting. And what happened was six original women came up to this white woman, and they said to her, say it, sister, because until you do, nothing changes. And she said, what are you talking about? Tell us what you think you know and what you believe from the very beginning. And I knew this woman, and I know what she was going. I knew what she was on about. She believed she was one of the sisters. And anyway, she said, oh, I can't say this. And she said, well, you have to say it. So she did. She said, yes, I believe I'm one of the sisters. She said, you are. You're the seventh. Six are black, one is white, because that's the way it's got to be. And what I was told was that was the last confirmation. What I've been told by the elders was, because in Australia, we are aware of the fact there are different alien groups, but we're not interested in any of them. We're only interested in the Pleiadians. No one else came to Australia but the Pleiadians. And there was a deal made. They knew in the future they'd be needed again, and right. They were called. They were sung. They were called. And they're coming. And that's been very clear. Every elder I've spoken to says not long. I know some elders now have gone bush. They don't live in the country. They don't live in houses anymore. They're just waiting in the bush. And the story is that they're on their way, and they will be. I know some elders claim it's this year, but I'm not prepared to say that. I've had a lot of elders say it will be this year, but that's, I'll pass it on, but I'm leaving that as it is. They claim, and I've gone from about 50% to 90% convinced that this is going to happen, that sometime very soon there will be a massive ship that will hover above Uluru, which some people call there's rock, but that's the rock. And what's very interesting is, I don't know if you know this, that about 3 months ago, the last person was allowed to walk on the rock.
Yes,
I did. When that happened, a group of people went up on the last day, because it was the last day up there, and they were angry because they figured they had the right to climb on this rock forever. So they defecated on the site, they urinated on the site, and they trashed it. They did everything they, well, I'm not making this up, this is quite true. They did everything they can to make a statement about their anger about being, not being allowed to go where they want, even on sacred ground. The next day, Uluru was covered with the biggest storm that's been there in the last century. It was cleaning the rock. Now, the rock had to be cleaned because what I'm told is the elders, from the elders, all of them, is that the ship will hover. One elder insists it lands. I don't care. Hovers or lands, I don't care. Above Uluru.
Uh-huh.
Now, what they are waiting for, and I've got to make this point, it's very clear, and I think you probably know this anyway, the rule amongst the aliens and extraterrestrials who I give respect is they can never interfere directly with what we do.
Right.
I know the Greys break that rule, and I know the reptilians do, but that's different. Right. But on this occasion, that rule still applies. The ship will hover above Uluru. And then what it does, this is what all the elders have told me the same story, I even know the number. They need a certain number of people in Australia who are still enlightened, not fearful, not scared, not worried about their jobs, not worried about everything else this our world creates and all the worry, and are enlightened and want to give their soul to a change. If that number, and I've got to tell you, the number goes into six figures, so that worries me greatly. If that number is there, they will take that energy, they'll take the energy of the people in Australia, they will concentrate it into this ship, and then that ship, the energy will hit Uluru. It will then hit Uluru and charge Uluru up. Then it will go to five other sites in Australia, which I'm aware of three. I don't know where the other two are. I roughly know where they are, but not specifically. Three I do know of. And then those sites will be energized, and then that will create a web pattern that will go to all around the globe. And all the indigenous people that are setting up for this, they have sacred sites that will also be charged. Now, the charge works something like this. I'm sure you're aware of the Schumann resonance and the fact that it has peaked at 140 and 150.
I'm a gatekeeper as well, so I do charging of the grid a lot. So.
Okay. Well, what's going to happen is instead of peaking at 150, it will stay there permanently. But there's a drawback with that. According to the elders, and I don't doubt them because it's come from so many, I'm 90% convinced this is going to take place. The drawback is this. If there aren't the correct number here, the ship will hover, then fly off, and very much like a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, when the whales clear off, when they say thanks for the fish, the Pleiadians will say thanks for the visit, I'm off, and they'll leave us to our own devices. I'm told within two generations, will be wiped out. That's the option. We either heal the planet ourselves, or if that's not the case, then the Earth has to clear us off because we're dangerous. But there is an equivocation in this, because what I've been told is there will be, for a period of time, two vibrations taking place simultaneously in one material plane, which is a physical impossibility. Which means the Earth will be vibrating at 150, 200, whatever, and some souls will gravitate towards that vibration, but others can't do it. It's too high for them. It will kill them.
Right, and it'll make them freak out.
Stay on the lower vibration, and you'll have beings on this planet. Now, what I've been told by the elders is we can see each other somewhat like shadows.
Yes.
But both cannot continue to exist. So what then takes place, according to the elders, is that the lower vibration withers and dies. And all of the people and souls that lean that way, whether they be bankers, CEOs, reptilians, whatever group that may be, and let's be honest, probably 95% of the bankers, or 99, but there might be a couple that are okay. When it comes to generals and politicians, Jesus, I think the numbers are low. But anyway, we can't generalize because there'll be reptilians who are evolved too. So you can't generalize like this. It's come and go. Right. What then happens is the lower vibration withers and dies. And as it does, all of the souls that are drawn that way are locked into that vibration. Okay, picking that up after a little break, primarily what takes place next is that the stronger vibration takes over, the weaker vibration finally disappears, and with that, the souls of those people locked in that particular vibration, which will be in the billions, also disappear.
What do you mean by disappear?
So well, that's interesting. Be able to see them? Yeah. I'm going to actually disagree slightly with some elders who gave me the story of that, because that never resonated with me, and I've been told something simpler later that makes more sense. What my elders told me to begin with, I said, what happens to them? What do you mean by disappear? I said, well, they come back because they incarnate and come back again. And they've all said no.
Wow.
And I said, oh, hang on for a sec. What are you saying? And their indication was, to begin with, but I don't think this is quite right, their indication is that the souls will be destroyed. That never came to me, but I've been told something now that makes more sense. I've been told it's not so much their souls will be destroyed, it's that they will be banned and barred from re-entering, reincarnating on this planet. And that will take place for a massive amount of time. We're going into maybe millions of years before the whole Earth is elevated again, then they may get a chance. But I think they got that slightly wrong when they said they would be destroyed. My understanding is they will be banned and barred admission from this planet because of what they've done here before, and because this was the last time where you had to make a decision. As one of the elders said to me, to incarnate and become involved completely is a huge task. This time round, the bar has been set so low that you could hop over it and you get on the other side. All you've got to have is good intention and be aware.
Oh, so it's not like the law of one where you have to be 51% service to others in order to not. Okay.
No, it's got nothing like that. Each person will judge themselves. Mm-hmm. Each person will make their own judgment. Their soul will be the judge, jury, and executioner. If their soul is attracted towards a higher vibration, it should be now.
Right.
If you're running out of time, then go towards that. And what I've been told is that from that point on, the earth will resonate at a much higher vibration, and that will lead to it being cleaned. Okay, and it will fight itself, because as you probably know, the North Pole is somewhere in Siberia,
right,
and it's still moving. Well, it will right itself again, because the earth is now out of balance and it's wobbling, as we know.
Right.
This balanced back again. If that doesn't work, if there aren't the right number, and I've got to make the point, it's six figures, and Australia's got 25 million people, and I've got to tell you right now, everyone's very fearful around here. So it's...
Why do you think it's just Australia? Is it because I know there would be some Westerners like myself who would be open to, you know, going there to offer my energy to Gaia, like that would be something I would do. Why is it just Australia where they're choosing?
Why?
Uluru?
Well, because Australia's the place where humanity began, not Africa.
Okay.
And that's where the first, I'm not saying there wasn't seeding with the Anunnaki, the Assyrians and others. Everyone's seed is, for God's sake, we are dog's breakfast of genes. But the Pleiadians, the difference is I've got the dreaming stories. I know how they came.
Right.
And they came as partners. That is not the case on other parts of the continent. They came here to learn from the original people and for us to learn from them. It was a partnership of equals that did not take place for the gold mining, the Anunnaki and other places.
Oh,
often humans were manipulated and created and genetically changed to become compliant. And, of course, we still see that today everywhere.
Yes, we do.
The Pleiadian genes are different. The Pleiadian genes are the genes where we're equal to them, where there is no imposition of one group on top of another. The stories, I know the dreaming story about them first coming, and it was for quite some time, according to my elders, they could not get here because we did not agree to it.
Okay.
It's a different setup. They couldn't just barge in here like they did elsewhere and say, we're here.
That's why you don't hear a lot of stories of Palladians, you know, abducting people or things like that, because they believe in the same philosophy. They have to be invited, right?
Exactly.
That resonates with me too. That makes a lot of sense.
So that's basically the story of what we believe the ascension will actually be. And I know that I am aware of a story that took place up in Darwin, Northern Territory, I met the guy. One of the guys worked for 60 Minutes, a cameraman. He swore by what took place. And he told me the story when an uncle, and I can't say his name, brought one of these sticks. I've held one. And he said, the change is coming. I'm just warming this stick up a bit because all the sticks and all the sacred objects will be in the ground at the same time. We have to keep this place sacred. He said, I'm just warming this stick up and watch what happens. And he placed the stick on the ground in a park in Darwin. And the story was there were about 90 people walking around that park at the time and they all fell down on the ground. Two people didn't. One was a guy I spoke to, and the 60 Minutes cameraman did fall. And they laid there for 5 hours. The ambulances came for quite a few people to hospital, and they woke up 5 hours later and said, what am I doing here? And what the elder told this guy told me the story, says, that's what will be coming. He said, look around. 90 people there, only two didn't fall. He said, think about that. So that was about 5-6 years ago that happened. That's not a very good score. Two out of 90, that is not going to get us the number we need. So, and as you probably know, of all the years, and I know this is true, this will be the most fearful and chaotic. Now, there's a reason why that's going to be the case, because it has to be. Because there is one way the reptilians, draconians, are the ones who are still trying to hang on to this planet can keep it this way, which is the Pleiadians don't have enough people to feed the energy off. If they don't have that any people, then the reptilians and the draconians and the people who run this place keep it. It's that simple. It's a dividing line for humanity. If we
this
don't get
this story, really needs to get out there, though. I mean, you know, I can't. I mean, this is very important stuff. People need to realize that it's now or never. Make you know, and if we're going to do this, we've got to get the energy from everybody now, or you know, tomorrow might be too late.
Exactly.
And I don't think enough people know this. Yeah.
Our fires in Australia.
Oh my gosh.
Are symbolic. Of nature beginning the cleaning of the planet, and it starts in Australia again.
I just told Claire that yesterday too, as well. I said, I think because I was getting some channelings that the fires are the start of the Gaia cleaning herself of, you know, the evil. And
it is, but you know what's interesting about this, and it's quite interesting that in Australia, it's a very conservative country, has mm-hmm. been for a long, long time now, mm-hmm. and when you do surveys about what's the most important issue, whenever the economy is high, environment is about 6 or 7. For the first time ever in Australia, the most important issue in Australia for the first time ever is the environment and the animals. You see, this is the first time we've had bushfires where people have said, what about the animals? They've never been mentioned in a bushfire ever in Australia, ever. We never think about the animals. We've lost bitterns. I think we've lost about 3/4 of all the koalas. They've all been burnt out. Kangaroo Island is the last place in Australia. Most people overseas don't know this. All of the animals, all the koalas in Australia on the mainland are diseased with chlamydia, or some sort of disease like that. The ones on Kangaroo Island are clean.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Kangaroo Island has been burnt through, and we had about 20, 30,000 koalas there. They're talking about 3 or 4 that are left, 3 or 4,000, the rest are dead. They are the only clean koalas left in Australia. All the other ones have got this disease which is spreading through them, causing grief, and we can't stop it.
This sounds similar to, you know, the Noah's Ark story, like, you know, all the animals were being destroyed. Like, doesn't it, you know, it resonates. It all seems like this is so cyclical, like this, we've been here before, and it's just happening again, you know?
It's not the first time.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
We've done this before, but this actually, you can go back to previous times. Obviously, Atlantis is one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they made mistakes and they fell, but I know now, and I've been told by many people, this is worse because the Atlanteans were using crystal energy.
Right.
We just burn anything, and we don't care where the smoke goes and where the pollutants go. We don't care. It doesn't matter. They had some degree of control in Atlantis, but it fell anyway because there were things that went wrong. But in this case, we've gone much further. We're much further down the line. And what's basically happening is nature is now claiming this back. And, of course, Australia, the issue with Australia is not a normal bush like you guys have got overseas. Our bush is human-made. The original people have been fire-stick farming and burning this land now for hundreds of thousands of years. Now, we do know if you go back to Australia, say, 400,000 to 500,000 years ago, gum trees made up less than 1% of the vegetation in this country.
Because the original people have been burning, what's taken place is the trees that can survive small soft fires and germinate in those fires, like eucalypts and wattles and acacias, have become the dominant species because the original people have been burning the land softly for hundreds of thousands of years.
This is the burning the bush, right? This is the burn to cleanse.
This is called soft burn, not the way white fellas do it today when we become big infernos. What a soft burn is, they will take an area and they will mosaic it. They'll burn one patch, then another. They call out to the animals, chase them out first. They've got escape routes. Then they do another one, maybe 100 meters away, then another one. Then they come back later and do the other ones. And if you keep soft burning in winter, as opposed to what we do now, then you control the environment and there's nothing that burns up the barks and explodes the trees, which is what happens now.
This is the way we used
to look after the land. But when the white fellas came here, they kicked all the black fellas off and said, we'll do it our way. Well, lo and behold, ladies and gentlemen, because this bush needs fire and it's got to be managed properly, the people who've been managing Australia for hundreds of thousands of years were sent out the back and told to shut up. Well, we did. And now I'm noticing all over now the media saying, I think we've got it wrong, boys and girls. Maybe we should be asking the black fellas how to do this.
We've got a problem. We don't know what we're doing.
Well, there's great. I've just written an article for Nexus, which is a big Australian magazine, and Duncan asked me to write an article. And in it, I gave an example of one farm. And this farmer listened to the black fellas and he let them come and do fire stick farming, soft burning on his land. And he did it everywhere. He went back to his farm. And his farm was the only one that wasn't burnt, and all the buildings were untouched except one. And that was a building 500 metres away. And you know why it was burnt? Because he didn't do the fire stick farming down on that building, but did it on the rest. Now, there is story time after time where blackfellas were doing fire stick farming where that area is fine and everywhere else is just burnt to a cinder.
You know,
So we now know because we've seen it. And it's in the paper and it's being reported by the ABC, it's reported by us, oh, this area's okay. And every time we find out it's been burnt old way. New way burning, no good, because you're gonna burn down the house. Old way is you burn outside the house and you burn on the lawn and it's just a soft fire and it goes out the same day it's lit. That's the difference. Okay. Now nothing goes out. We used to have a situation in Australia where the fire is, we put out the fires. Mm-hmm. They can't do it. We cannot put out the fires in Australia until we get 3 or 4 inches. And if it doesn't rain, it will keep burning forever. We can't put it out. We cannot put out one fire now. We used to be able to put them all out. And the fires will tell you, these flames are going up 30, 40, 50 metres and they jump a kilometre in one shot. And before they know it, they're covered in three sides by fire. What they do is they stand near houses and try and protect them. Right. Now, we've lost thousands of houses that have been put down. They couldn't protect them. They just couldn't do it. That's all we're doing. What we're doing is we're standing at a dike and we're putting fingers in there and we're hoping if we put enough fingers in there, but it keeps leaking all the time.
That doesn't work, yeah. Have you heard about the story about what's going on at Uluru this weekend, about the opening of the portal by the Pleiadians? Do you think it's okay?
I know there's a group that are doing a big thing. They're doing a ceremony there this weekend and they've been making an issue of it. And I do know the group involved. And one of them asked me if I would publicly say that it's going to be this weekend.
Uh-huh.
I said, no, I'm not going to say that. It's because I was never told that. I was told by two that it might be towards the end of the year, but it's not the start of the year. No. I've not heard one original. I know that people have said this, but I haven't heard one original person who's got up and said in front of everyone, the change will take place early January. That's not been said by anyone. I think basically, and I'm going to be very honest about this, they booked that place out a year and a half ago, right, to have that meeting there.
Wow, I didn't know.
I think it's a way of drumming up bums on seat, personally, because I don't know. I know they've said that. They asked me to say it, and I wouldn't. And if they've got someone to say it, I'll tell you now, they don't announce it like that. It's not done like that.
That resonated with me, too, when I heard about it. I was like, well, but they are doing a group meditation, which which is, I know, is very effective when a lot of people meditate at the same time.
Oh, that one hurts.
Vibration to raise.
The rock's got to get ready. It's not going to hurt for them to give all their positive energy towards the rock, because the rock will be the focal point of all this. And most of those people, when their energies are called, they'll be honed in for it and they'll be comfortable. Yeah. So it's not a bad thing in that respect. But I think it's bold, and I'm not.
But the money part is, when you involve money in meditation for something, that's not, you're getting the wrong result. You know what I mean?
Here's the drawback. If you make that statement and it doesn't happen, then it lessens it for everyone. Because everyone's saying, oh, yeah, you said that before and it didn't happen. You know, you hippies, you make these stories up and it didn't take place. What a load of crap. Because once you say something's going to happen and it doesn't, then it becomes like crying wolf, isn't it? And you say it the second time, to say, yeah, I've heard that before. I don't think it's a very good idea to make a claim, because if it doesn't happen, they're not going to look that, it's not going to look good.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what are your ideas? What can we do to help, like Westerners especially, because a lot of my listeners are Westerners. What can we do to help the Palladians with this energy increase and to help? There's nothing?
There is and there isn't, because that part of what I've said, they're going to come. And they're going to land here. But the part of this where people can help is this, that if this planet is in war, in fear of war, which we are, in fear of economic collapse, in fear of losing their job, and if people start to get covered up and enveloped in that blanket of fear, we're screwed. So what people have got to do is they've got to be positive throughout this year, and they've got to talk things like, you've got to say these things are going to happen and believe them and tell other people. We call this seed dreaming. If you put a story out and you throw it out to a lot of people, most of you look at it and say, what a load of crap. Some will say, oh, I don't really believe it. And a few will say, oh, there could be something there, but I'm not keen on that. That's okay. But then as things evolve over the next few months that go on, and they see more and more of the world falling apart, they might start to think, well, maybe that's our only way out. And they may start to think more about it. So primarily the best way that all of us
is to start talking
to
about
deal
it.
Deal with this is to talk about it, to believe in it. Meditation, if you want to do that, all those things, and talk to other people about it. You see, the only way we're going to change this world is not through governments. They're beyond hope.
Yes.
They are under the control of others. That's not going to change it. The people can change things, not the governments. And the people have got to believe that there's a change. And they've got to look at this and say, well, this is crap. The way we live is pathetic. This can't continue. There's got to be a better way, particularly when you look at it from my point of view. I've got a grandchild at the moment, and I just think the world that we've made for him is shit.
I have a daughter as well, and it scares me.
You've got kids. Okay, you're in the same situation. You know, okay, I mean, my case, I've only got 20 years and I'm out of here. I'll probably be okay. But for my grandson, he's screwed, because the way things are now, our leaders cannot decide anything except making money. That's all they're there for.
And wrong
money
decisions,
and the environment are now in contest.
Yeah.
And we have to change. So basically what people need to do is, the ones, most of your listeners are empathetic and open. Mm-hmm. They have to hang on to that, because this year they're going to be pulling at the strings here to try and unravel the whole thing. The reptilians I believe my elders say the end of the year. I believe it's going to be within the next year or 2 years or 3 years. I know it's going to be close. I know they're coming.
Yeah, I don't know. Believe too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what people have got to do is they've got to just say, well, I just say to people, and they say it's ridiculous, say, well, then here's your option. More of the same. And they say, oh, that's hopeless. Well, can you change it? And I'll tell you, they can't. I said, well, how will we change? They say, well, we can't. I said, well, then if that's the case, we can't change ourselves. We need help. And the only people are going to help us. But there's one point I've got to make about this.
Mm-hmm.
I asked the elders about this too when the ship comes. I said, oh, shit, mate. When the ship comes and they see them, they're all going to say, oh, the hippies are right, I want to join them. He told me, no.
Yep, too late.
Too late. He said, yeah, it's got to be a leap of faith. You have to believe that there's a need for a change. And if you can't believe that, make that the fabric of where you come from, don't come after the event and say, I want to join the team, because there's no room. The teams were picked. before the referee came to blow the whistle. So you've got to be clear about that. And a few people are going to say, well, I want evidence. You're not going to get it. You are not going to get Jesus in the sky coming down on the cross and saying, boys and girls, behave. It's not going to be like that.
That's what faith is, you know?
Every person's got to make a decision. They've got to make a decision about their future and their children's future, about where they should take themselves. Do they want to do this? Do they want to continue? Or do they want to try and prepare for something? I said to people, and they say, well, what if it doesn't happen? Well, what if you lost?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. That's so funny, because it's not even, regardless of the spirituality aspect of it, right now what's going on is not working, right? Everybody believes that, okay?
You come to Australia, you see why it's not working. You've only got to look at the
scenario,
sky.
It gets better, you know? I mean, it's funny. And I think a lot of it, too, if people, each person would do their ancestral healing for them and their past generations, that lifts a lot up, too, you know, just doing that for yourself and each individual. And that, you know, gets rid of a lot of the clutter to be able to stay positive, you know?
Well, people have asked me, what is it you need to do to make sure that you're part of this? I said, simple. There's only two words. I said, what, do I follow a teaching? I said, oh, shit, no. It doesn't matter whether you're atheist, or religious. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You'll be judged on two things, and the words are good intentions. That's it. Nothing else counts. I don't care which team you belong to. I don't care if you're Buddhist, Muslim, Hindu, Jewish. It doesn't matter to me. And I don't care if you're an atheist, because atheists, in some respects, I give them credit.
I do too.
If they behave well, they've got no incentive to behave well. They might as well take it all. They're only going to be here once. And if they behave well respectfully, they get an extra tick, because they don't even have the incentive to do anything but selfish. So it won't be, I'm in a team, I believe in Jesus, I believe in Buddha, I believe in anything. It'll be to do with the fact, what are you like when you deal with people? How do you talk to people? Are you an angry person? Do you respect other people? Do you love the environment? Those are the things.
Do you treat yourself well, and how do you speak to yourself about yourself? You know, that those kinds of things matter too. You know, the negative talk to yourself, that whole thing, getting out of that cycle, I think is important too. Because in order to treat others well, you have to treat yourself well first.
Exactly. And you've got to remember too, your soul is a record of everything you've said and done, and you can't get rid of it. So therefore, when you come to be judged, you'll be judged irrespective of what you think, simply by what you said, what you've done. And it's not difficult to respect nature, and it's not hard to find a koala being burned. Difficult to watch.
Yeah.
If you aren't upset by that, then you shouldn't really be here anymore. And it's best to leave this planet, because you're no use to us anymore. So it really comes down to the fact now is what you're doing right now, what you're thinking about, the way you behave, that's your judgment. No one's going to judge you but yourself. There's no being up there that's going to stand there and line everyone up and say, yes, you get a pass or a fail. You do it yourself, man. And the problem is, at the moment, you don't realize, well, some people don't realize that your soul is going to be a very strict and hard taskmaster if you failed, and it will give you a fail, an F. So this is the time. But please, when people start putting times and dates and saying, come here, it's going to happen, in the long run, that's not a good thing. Because when it doesn't happen, then people lose faith and give up. And they say, well, I thought it was going to happen, but it didn't. And therefore, if it doesn't happen, then I'll just go back with the other team. So that's the part I'm concerned about with that meeting.
I understand what you're saying. Time is a man-made concept anyways. You know,
it's
time. It's going to happen, but time doesn't matter. It will happen. It's just, you know, that, and that's, I firmly believe in that too. I think what everything you have said has 100% resonated with me. And I don't think I've heard anything yet to this point that I've felt that way about. Everything that you've said seems to be right on par with the things that I think, you know, and the things that I internally know, and that it just, this sounds like it makes sense, you know. And I think a lot of other people who are, you know, who meditate, who are trying to work on bettering themselves and working on the ascension, things like that, I think this will resonate with them too.
Well, I've got an advantage because it's not I've been lucky enough to get a lot of concrete evidence. I mean, it's well known in Australia, particularly the Australian government knows this back the front, that we found a Pleiadian. We've got a Pleiadian skull. In fact, it's in our house right now. It's about 5 metres away from where I'm sitting.
Oh, my God.
We know that's a Pleiadian skull. And I've even been in contact with it. I speak to the top level of government in New South Wales that knows about this. And they... How can I put this? I've got 4 letters from the government to put me in jail. I've got about 7 or 8 emails threatened to put me in jail, and it's been constant for the last 2 years from the government.
Are you getting death threats and things like that? Because
My point is this. We found 4 of these skulls in Australia over the last 2 years.
Yes.
Why now? We've also got an Atlantean ring, which has been found in Australia in the last, and I've got it right now with me. We found all these things recently, and I keep wondering, why are all these things turning up in Australia? I mean, the ring from Atlantis is absolutely the best proof on the planet that Atlantis exists. I don't know where it is, but we can prove it exists now. Why did it turn up now? Why didn't it turn up 500 years ago or 600 years from now? Why are all these things turning up? Because the government, I've even spoken to people in the government, they say the skull you've got, there's nothing like it on this planet, and there's no human that even comes close to what this thing is like. I mean, it's
brain.
Do
you let people see it? Do you let people see it or touch it?
Touch it?
No.
Oh, God, no. No, okay. No one but me's touched it. It nearly killed me. No. I was on death's door for 6 months when I touched that skull, and I'm okay with it now, but if anyone else touched it, killed them within a couple of minutes. No. No, it comes from way back, and it shouldn't be touched at all. I'm allowed to touch it because it's with me now, but it tried to kill me.
What about looking at it? Do you let other people come and see it, or do they get energies off of it? What?
Well, give me 1 minute. I'll go and give it to you. Good point. I'll show you. Sorry about going away for a sec, but anyway, I'm back now. I know we're going to talk about this. Okay, first up, what I'll do is I'm going to show you a portion of the actual skull, but give me a second. I've got to put a glove on first because I don't want to contaminate it.
Right.
Okay, can you see that?
Yes, I can. Oh, my God.
Can you see its forehead? There it is sideways. Can you see its forehead?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't know what.
Well, no, it's like not like a normal head. It's, wow.
Here is one of these when we've got the eight pieces put together. This is a cast. I'll hold it where it can be seen. Now I'll turn around face on. And there it is there. Can you see? There's no forehead. Now when I hold it up this way.
I'm getting intense energy when I look at that. Really. Just over the, that's weird.
Right. Now I'll show you the reconstructed skull. This took 6 months and 2 experts to do, and this is a reconstructed skull based on those 8 pieces and photographs of 50 photos we took of a complete skull with a complete face intact. I've seen that too in a burial site. Now this guy's made a mistake because he's made the forehead too high, and what you'll get to see this time, this is the size of the eyes.
Wow.
Now I'll tell you a few things about this skull. Number one, it has no sutures. Number two, I want you to look at the skull this way. Look at the back of it.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Now, I'm going to tell you something. You're a woman. Would you like to give birth to this?
No.
Think about it. Going to say, please, because a normal sapien, the widest part is the middle. Here, the widest part is the back. By the way, this is 400 to 500 cc bigger in brain capacity than any Homo sapien. If you look at this here, see the eyes?
Yes.
They are 46% bigger than a Homo sapiens eyes. The nose starts in line with the eyes.
Uh-huh.
The most amazing part about this being is when I was on a burial site with it, I was taken there by the elders. The humerus bone, which is the bone from up here that goes down to the elbow, right? Yours and mine is somewhere between 28 to 32. The basketballers might go to 33 because they're long, right?
Right.
A gibbon is 35. I picked up the humerus skull with gloves, of course, and I put it against my arm, and it went half the way down past my elbow down to here. And the weird part was when it got down there, there was no elbow joint. It measured 43 centimetres and we hadn't got to an elbow joint. which means the arm has to be over a meter long.
Which means they're dragging. Tall. I mean, they're about 14 feet tall. I mean, or something, right?
No, they are not, because I measured the femur bone and it's exactly the same size as mine. So it's not a giant.
Wow.
Here's my point. The bone, this bone was no thicker than 1 inch. I'm using 1 inch because you Americans don't do centimeters, so I'm putting it. Understand it. A Gibbons is twice as thick because it's its main arm. Now, here's my problem. This being we found, its arm is much longer than any arm on any primate, anything on the planet. Mm-hmm. But it won't work. The bone is too thin. Okay. Why did nature grow something that bloody long,
right. That
thin? Because by the time you put the ligaments and muscles on that, it's a useless piece of work. You couldn't play tennis with it. You could pick up a couple of rocks and throw them, but you'd be careful because you might hurt them. It doesn't work. Now, what I've got is I've got a being there I've shown you that has eyes. You can't go out in the daylight with those eyes.
No, yeah.
You're blinded. This being would have to wear sunglasses permanently, but even if he did that, what use is the arms? So my question is, my problem is, we found four of these beings spread 2,000 k's away in Australia, all the same type. Nature has made a huge mistake here. It can't go out in the day and its arms don't work. Why would nature do that? But if the being was born in a darker place with less gravity, larger eyes, thinner arms is fine, less gravity, I can still get the ligaments and muscles on now because I don't have the pressure and gravity. So what I have and what I've shown you...
That makes complete sense, yeah. They obviously aren't from here. So
what you've got with this thing here, the one I'm holding up, and I'm not allowed to take this out of this room or put in jail. The government's told me that four or five times. I'm not allowed to test it. I'm not allowed to take any of these bones out of this room.
You keep it in your house, but they won't let you do anything with it.
Oh, they know it's me and they know it's in my house. Let me keep it in the house. If I took it outside the house, I've got to test it, I'd be in jail inside a day.
I'm surprised they haven't come and confiscated it from you.
Because it's so well known that I've got it. It's very difficult for them because we're known throughout Australia as being the radical whatever.
Right.
And they, all the academics know we've got it. Everybody knows we've got it. And they've actually...
It would be a big deal, right.
I am going to say this, that the government, after we constructed the skull and put it at this level, the one I've shown you here, the government did back down again a fair bit and said, oh, we're not going to put you in jail anymore. In fact, I got a letter off them 2 weeks ago, an official warning, where they said, we're not going to put you in jail for one offence right now, but we could later on. So right now, we are not going to take you in jail, but what they're saying very simply is, you shut your mouth up and we might leave you alone, but if you cause us more trouble, you're gone. So anyway.
Oh.
But that, to me, why was it found now? Because it came here. They're Pleiadians. This is the Pleiadians we're talking about. And they came here a long, long time ago to heal this planet, and it failed. So they're coming back to complete a journey. We believe those beings there are about 900,000 years old.
Now, do you speak with the Pleiadians? Do you channel them or do you communicate with them? No.
No, I do. Honestly, look, I was a principal. I actually do science, okay, and that's one of the reasons why I'm causing a lot of problems with mainstream, because if I was channeling or doing stuff like that, they'd love to hear that, okay?
Right, because then they could just see you as a,
When I did something like when I got the Atlantean ring, first thing I did was I did the chemistry.
Yeah.
We found out what was in it. I start with science, and my job, when the elders told me was, my elders said this, we have a black fella story, you've got black white fella thinking. You tell the white fellas where they're thinking what we're saying is true, and they said, go and get us the science. So that's been my brief from the very beginning. Do I believe in all the things, the magical parts of this? Yeah, I do. But when I'm doing this, I always separate the two. I'll do a whole lot of science and then say, okay, now here's my part. You can take it or leave it, but it's going to be part of the story. Because when I go into country, I know original people were dealing with magic first and foremost and everything else second, so I have to acknowledge it. But I have to make sure, before I've done that, I've cleared up all the scientific edges. So for this stuff here, the skulls, yeah, the government knows what we've done. We've written many papers on it, and they are aware of it, and it's gone around a fair bit. But it's gone around so much now that to come and attack us and steal it off us, remember, what's very important is the skull was found in 1953 in January, which is when I was born. But most importantly, until 1966 in Australia, Aboriginal people were counted in the census in 1965 with koalas and kangaroos. They weren't counted as people.
Oh.
And they had no legal protection. And when they finally got legal protection in 1972, it wasn't retrospective. This was found in 1953.
Mm-hmm.
I know that, and so does the government, which means if I want to, it's mine.
Yeah.
But what I want to do is I want to analyze it and then bury it.
Yeah.
Put it back.
Well, and okay. I think that,
and I know where it came from.
That's so important because, you know, when I do my psychic work, I have an algorithm that I had created for me to track my accuracy. I'm very scientific about it as well. Like everything that I do, I try to, you know, apply the scientific principles to it so that it isn't so woo-woo to everybody, you know, because that's the only way we legitimize these things, because we all know they exist. But for the people that don't, you know, I think it's helpful to bring it down to the level of science to them, because even what scientists are doing nowadays, they don't have an idea of any of this stuff. Like that's not real science. What they're doing isn't real science, in my opinion.
No, it's not. Science and magic should run together.
Absolutely.
And they don't do that.
No.
But we try and first of all present the science and then say, okay, here's the science now. Let's talk about it. I mean, the case with that skull there,
We need more people like you guys out there doing this.
Sorry?
I said we need more people like you out there doing this. Because I think...
Yeah, if they don't end up in jail. You got to remember this being here. It has no sutures.
Yeah, that's right. that's what blew me away.
That is so important, because you've got to understand Lucy had 600 cc, right?
Yeah.
3.4 million years, 600 cc. How did that hominid grow? It's because Lucy had sutures. All the hominids have sutures. That's what separates us from all the apes and all the primates, because apes and primates have a sagittal keel on the top of their head,
mm-hmm.
which means their brain will never, ever get bigger. Because we have aren't we supposed to come from apes? That doesn't make sense. Anyway, we'll leave it aside for now. But because this one has no sutures, I can't envisage how women give birth to this thing, because there'll be no give and take in the skull. It won't bend, which is what it does when it's birth canal.
When
that's
why
when a baby, when
you couldn't fit the skull through without the sutures.
Well, so if you've got no sutures, guys, you're going to have cesarean or don't have kids.
Can you show me the ring, Steve, that you have and explain about
which
it?
Which one, the Lemurian one or the Atlantean one? I've got them both.
Either one or both, actually.
Here it is here. I'll try and hold it up. It's here. It's quite unusual in one respect. And the story with this ring is that I have people who buy these things on the open market when they've been sold and sent around the world. That's how we get all this stuff, because it's in Australia. It's been sold everywhere. Okay. These people buy these things for me. They buy me rocks. They buy me skulls. They buy me everything. And then one person rang me up and said, I found this ring. And I said to Roz at the time, I said, yes, and? She said, I'm going to buy it. I think we should look at it. And said, why? I said, I don't do rings. I said, you put me out in country, I'm fine. Give me skulls, I've learned that. Do rocks, I've got 180 sacred rocks. Mm-hmm. Any of that stuff I'm fine with, but I don't do rings, I don't do personal adornments. She said, but the ring needs to be bought. I said, Roz, if you want to buy it, you can, but that's your decision, not mine. So she bought it. And then she rung me up and told me I'm having a problem with the ring. I said, what's that? She said, it keeps disappearing. Said, what do you mean? She said, we put it on a table. We put it on the kitchen table. We walk out and we come back. It's gone. It doesn't come back for 3 days. And there it is on the kitchen table. I said, oh, yeah, sure, Roz. I'm sure that's the case. Then I found out her husband didn't believe it either. So he put the ring and put it on the kitchen table, walked outside, come back. It was gone. Didn't come back for 4 days. And eventually, when it did come back, the ring, this is what Roz said, and told her, got to come down to me. So they sent it to me. And so she sent it to me. And it was in a black pouch, which is up at the moment. And for 3 months, I'd walk past it and I'd write about rocks and I was writing about sidons. And I walked past it and think, yeah, great. Okay, a ring. What am I going to write? Nothing. And I left it. I didn't go near it for 3 months. And finally, I did, simply because I felt like, I know she spent a couple hundred dollars on this ring. I said, Jesus, I better do something. She's done it before. So I better write an article. So this is what the article is going to be about. Three paragraphs. This ring, the story I knew was this. It was found in a gold field in New South Wales, a place called Hill End. It was found by a prospector. And what happened is he went there with his mate and they bought a brand new massive metal detector. And in typical Australian fashion, they decided to celebrate their win before they got out in the field, and they got drunk that night, really drunk, celebrating the fact that they were going to find gold. That was the whole point, because Hill End is a gold mine.
Right.
So old mate Sean Oakes, his name is, and he's quite happy for me to use his name and back it up, everything I'm saying. I spoke to him personally. He gets up in the morning feeling very seedy, got a hangover, and he says, oh, man, I've got this machine. I've never used it before. I better practice, because his mate was asleep. So he decides to go up this hill. There's no gold up that hill. Everyone knew that. There was no track up there. It was all bladey grass. I've seen pictures of it. There's nothing there. Mm-hmm. He's halfway up the hill, and his machine goes off. He said, what's going on here? There's nothing up here. And he starts digging, and he goes down a meter, a full meter. It takes a while.
Right.
He's got his shovel, and he stops. He's thinking, what am I doing, wasting my time? He puts the machine. It goes off really big, and he keeps digging. He went down 1.5 meters, 1.5 meters beneath the surface on the side of the hill. Do you know how long it takes to get there normally? About 50,000 years, if it was normally placed, if it just dropped and then fell on top.
Wow.
So he digs it out, and it's just all covered in dirt. Right. And then when he finally cleans it, went down to the creek and cleaned it. And if you look at it, it looks like gold.
Yeah.
And it's got markings on it. So he takes the markings around all these different people. And they look at the markings, say, don't know what it is, don't know what it is, but it's ancient. And it is ancient. You can see it's all worn.
Yeah.
Most symbols there are worn. You can just see most of them. So finally he says, okay, I cleans it up. He goes and gets it assayed. And what does he want? He wants gold, doesn't he?
Right.
And he gets I've got the reading. This isn't gold, not present. It's got copper, it's got zinc, it's got lead, it's got iron, and it's got nickel.
Right.
And he looks at that and thinks, copper, zinc, that's not worth shit. I'll sell it. So, but he had it for 5 years, okay, and then finally sold the Rossboard. So all I knew was I was going to write and say the ring was found in the dirt, and it shouldn't be here because original people aren't supposed to make copper rings like that. Therefore, what the hell does that mean? End of story.
Right.
Then I decided, well, I don't do computers. You know, earlier when I said I can't turn the Skype on, I had to wait for them to come up. We wouldn't be talking. I can't even ring a mobile phone. He has to give it to me and say someone's talking to you or ring it himself. I can't do it. I have no interest in computers.
Good for you, though. Good for you. That's how most people should be. I wish my life was like that.
I won't touch them. I won't go near them. I won't even hold them. I won't even carry a mobile phone. I haven't got one. Anyway, I decided, because Evan wasn't there, I'm going to type these five elements in and see what I find on the computer.
Yeah.
And I spent 3 hours. I couldn't find a paper that had all five elements in the same
existing
order.
Existing in the same
sometimes thing. It'd be cadmium in there or tin in there, but it was never the same. But there was one reading on Wikipedia, and I wouldn't go to it because I've read what Wikipedia say about us, and it's not very nice.
Right.
Not very nice at all. Anyway, I don't think much of them as an authority of anything. But finally I went on because I was desperate. And lo and behold, when I went to the page there, I see the word Aphrodite, Homer, Plato, Pliny the Elder. I thought, hang on for a sec, I'm going to read this. And there I find exactly the same five elements in the same order, and Wikipedia calls it the mythical orichalcum that was found in a mythical place called Atlantis. And as you would know, the word mythical in Wikipedia means it's a later ship.
Right.
I thought, okay, fine. And then I read some more about this orichalcum, which has got the same elements. And I find that Pliny the Elder said the mines were exhausted in the first century BC. They were gone. I find that Plato, we read what he got to say, checked it in Critias, and they talked about it a lot. And they were talking about it in the past tense. Orichalcum wasn't there anymore. But what we found out was orichalcum was used and was revered as much as gold in Atlantis. In fact, the temple of Poseidon and Cleito was lined, the inner temple was lined, the walls, the floor were lined in orichalcum. The plinth that had the writings of Poseidon and Atlas was on, made of orichalcum, and there was a gold dome on top. And there were orichalcum temples elsewhere, and when the sun shined on them, it went red, and you could see them kilometres away, 20, 30 kilometres away. It was the most sacred metal on the planet. It was devoted to Aphrodite as her metal, as her sacred metal.
This is from Atlantis. This is this.
Yes, only from Atlantis. So what we then had is the beginning of a story, but I prefer to go through the science so much about, not so much the magic, but we didn't have enough. I thought, okay, it could be that. But then we found, we did more research and we found that there was Orich Alcum found in a Roman boat that was wrecked near, a Roman galleon that was wrecked near Sicily from the 6th century BC, and in there were 38 ingots, same colour as this.
Wow.
They were just ingots, and they were going to be used in Roman coins, but it sunk. Our understanding was that was the last mine they were mining. Okay, right. Atlantis had been taken out, and they were working on one mine, and at some stage, probably after the 6th century and before the 4th century, that mine was exhausted. So my problem was this thing I've got here could have been Roman. Mm-hmm. Could be. Yeah. So what did we then do? I'm still doing science. We then found out what the breakdown of the Orich Alcum was in the Roman galleon, and we've got the breakdown of ours, and we found out something quite interesting. And it was this. In the Roman Orich Alcum, the copper is 75% or higher. Mm-hmm. This one, 73.96%. It's below 75. So there's a bit of a difference there. The zinc in the Orich Alcum and the Roman galleon was 20% or lower. Ours is 25.6. That's a big difference.
Yeah, sure.
Saying, hang on, we got a difference here. Then we looked at the trace elements. And the trace elements, which were nickel, lead, and iron, made up 5 to 10% in the galleon. And this is the big one.
Okay.
With this, those three elements make up less than 0.5%, like homeopathic drops that are put into it. Less than 0.5. You add the three together, it's about 0.46%. Mm-hmm. It's massively different, 10 times less. So what did we get from that? Yes, the Romans were mining Orich Alcum, but it was not from the same mine that this came from. So now I'm starting to think we have some very strong circumstantial evidence that this is an Atlantean ring. But there were still two things left, the markings on him.
Uh-huh.
And Roz, he's a fantastic researcher, found out one of the markings. And I can't show it to you right now, but look, if you go to our website, you'll see pictures of it anyway.
Okay.
And lo and behold, most people might know what I'm talking about. There's a statue of Atlas holding the world on his shoulders.
Yes, yes, right? Yes.
Uh-huh. You know that one?
Yes,
underneath it, there's a motif that goes all the way around it.
Yep.
It comes from the Berbers, and it's their symbol for Atlas, which is identical to four of the symbols here.
No way.
Yep. So we then thought, okay, the Berbers would say that symbol represents Atlas, and Atlas is the son of Poseidon because Atlantis was named after Atlas. But I still had the other symbol to look at. And the other symbol consisted of five circles. But when you look very closely, all of the circles are a different diameter. And above it is a straight line and a vertical line. And below it is a straight line and vertical line. I thought, well, what does that mean? So I went back to Plato.
Uh-huh.
And we looked at the description of Atlantis. And Atlantis, the inner part of Atlantis, was made of five rings of earth and water. What do we have here? Five rings, and across those rings were straight roads that went across vertically and horizontally that connect them all together. What do I have above and below it? Horizontal and vertical lines. They don't go through the ring because if they did, it'd just destroy it because it's only – there's 4 mils by 4 mils each caption. You can't do that. So what I've got is I've got Atlas for four, and the other five are made of five rings with those straight and vertical lines. So I'm saying that's got to be the five rings of Atlantis. So now we have three different pointers that point the same way. Now, this ring, I can tell you, we had offers made for it, one which was quite a few million, another one said, name your own price. And I didn't buy the ring. And the lady who bought the ring was quite tempted. And I said to her, I said, the person who's going to offer you $7 or $8 million for that, would you invite them home to your house? No, I said, well, do you think that they should have this ring? She thought about it a bit more. I said, yeah, it's a lot of money, mate, but who are we giving
tell us about the magic of the ring and what you think it's capable of doing, because people can't touch it, right? Even that there's a it has like a healing property as well as the opposite way, right?
Yeah, but here's the problem with that. Okay, all right, the problem with that is, as I said, I'm a scientist.
Uh-huh. Yep.
If I'm going to prosecute the fact that it's magic, because look, there's a bit more to this story, and I'll try and just do that story today because there's a bit more to fill it out.
Mm-hmm.
I went back to the computer. I thought, okay, I've got an Atlantean ring now. Mm-hmm. Either else. So I had a win. I've only been to the computer once in my life and got a result. So I'm going to go for two here. So I typed up Atlantean ring,
mm-hmm.
and there's an entry. There's an entry. There's one. And what? Luckily, I know the family. I know a person who belongs to the family that got involved in this. And the family that got involved in this, the guy that got involved with this ring is a guy called Howard Carter. Mm-hmm. He's an archaeologist that went into Tutankhamun's tomb.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if you know what happened when he went in there.
I don't.
He went in with 18 other people and 17 of them died within 6 months and he lived for another 30 years.
Wow.
Tutankhamun's tomb was cursed. They knew that when he went in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I do know that when one of the people died in Egypt, they had a blackout through the whole of Cairo. On another occasion, when another person died, all the dogs in Egypt started howling when he died. It was all to do with the curse.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found out was he wore a ring. He wore a ring into that crypt.
Yeah.
Now, here's the trick. Where did he get this ring from? It wasn't a ring. It was a copy. And this is what happened. The story is a French guy called Marquis de Agrain, who was an archaeologist, went to the Valley of Kings and found a ring which he called the Ring of Atlantis. I don't know how he was, it doesn't matter. Anyway, the husband of his granddaughter
mm-hmm.
wrote a book. His name is Andrew Bilisau.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a book in the 1920s, to say that this ring, the one that they have, this is the second one, they've got one there too, that ring can repel all negative forces on this planet. It will overcome any evil or negative force that ever existed. And, of course, he wrote this book and he published it and it went around the world and everyone said he was an idiot. But one person, Howard Carter from England, he was different. He went across and met them and they showed him the ring and they told him it's the markings on the ring that give its magic. And they made him an identical copy, which he put on his little finger. And if you ever see a picture of Howard Carter, every picture you will see on his little finger is that ring.
Okay.
He wore it in there, and I know this is true because I know a member of the family, his great-great-great-grandniece or something, who told me when Howard Carter died, it went to another member of the family, her great-auntie, and it's been passed on to that family ever since, and they wear it like I wear it on a string, mm-hmm. and they never let it go. Now, remember something, ladies and gentlemen, that was a copy of the original. Now, what we found out is the Atlanteans, I know this is going to sound like a story we've read somewhere recently, had three rings, not so much for the Elven kings, but it does have a Tolkien feel about it. But you must remember something. When people laugh about that, you need to understand that Tolkien was not a novelist. He was a professor in linguistics. And do you know where he got...
Tolkien had this ring too?
Hmm?
Tolkien had this ring too?
No. Tolkien wrote about the three rings.
Right,
he
okay.
got the story. It's a Scandinavian myth about three rings that ruled the world. Okay?
Uh-huh. Yes.
So what I'm saying is that Tolkien actually locked into a Scandinavian myth about the three rings. And what we've found, we're talking about two of these three rings now. One that Carter has a copy of that Marquis de Agrain and that family still have but can't turn on.
Right.
The second ring, which Atlas defiled, and that's why Atlas was holding the world, because what people don't know, that was a punishment you're looking at.
Yep. Okay.
It's wrong.
Wow,
he was punished. You see, he led a temple insurrection in the temple because he defiled this ring. It's been cut. There's a cut that goes straight through it, and it carries both good and evil. This is a mixed ring. It's both ways.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too. That
if the person
who holds it is evil, they can also unleash terror on the world, right? Yeah.
And it was stolen off us, and the person that actually stole it off us put up on Facebook and told everyone they were going to kill both me and Evan on a Monday night. My elders rung, and they nearly did kill us, both of us. We had the worst night we've ever had. We were attacked psychically by the ring. I had my rocks out. I had Aboriginal chants that had been given to me by my elders. We had everything going on. We salted everything. We smoked everything. And that night, Evan went to bed in the middle of winter And when he woke up, he had 30 ticks on him. And he didn't go out in the bush. And it's in the middle of winter. There's no ticks up here. And he's allergic to ticks. Nearly killed him. Oh. They nearly killed me too. Now, that ring, I can see because it's got both sides. But here's the interesting part, ladies and gentlemen. Tolkien was right about two things with the rings. A, they're very possessive and they take over control of the person that's with them. And secondly, there were three rings. The third ring is the one Tolkien read about, which was the Ring of Mordor.
Yeah.
This is not the Ring of Mordor, nor is the ring that Marquis de Agrain has. But the Ring of Mordor is one part of Tolkien's story that was never right. It was never destroyed. It was never destroyed.
So nobody's found that one yet, you think?
Oh, yes, they have.
Oh, okay.
Someone's wearing it. Haven't you noticed? Around.
Do you know who?
Yes, yeah, it's a reptilian. It sits behind bench. It sits behind a desk, and everyone else answers to that reptilian. That will be the person that holds that ring. They are aware that we have this ring. They know about it. Oh, don't worry about that. We know that already. They're fully aware of it. But that person has that ring, and the difference between this ring, which is not turned on, and the one that the French have, is that the ring they've got, the reptilians, they've turned it on. Look around today, you'll see why. The world has been run by them for the last 7,000-8,000 years because they've had their ring. Now, it's been a focal point.
When you say turned on, what does that mean to you? Because you said yours isn't turned on. Why haven't you turned yours on?
I'm not going to go into too much detail, but we've been given a ceremony, and I'm not going to discuss it now because I don't really want to. And all I can say is that the Marquis de Agrain's family don't know how to turn their ring on.
Uh-huh.
We're not sure, but first impressions and first results, we're in with the show. We're in with the show. And it's a long way off, and I've had so many people contact me and say, I'm the one who should wear the ring. I can turn it on. I get sick if I get it nearly every day. And I appreciate the fact that they write that, but it's not that easy because a ring will kill anyone that wears it. And they say, put it on my ring. I'm thinking, oh, yeah, right. I'll ring the ambulance at the same time. There are three women who've worn it.
Yeah.
And it didn't harm them. And I can tell you that when the change takes place, the ring will only be worn by women again. There'll be no man that wears it. I can wear it for now. I'm not the owner of the ring, and nor am I going to be the controller of the ring. It'll be done by women. When the change comes, I've got to make this point very clear, when the change does come, the whole world becomes matrilineal, and women take control. Men protect, women rule. There'll be no men rulers. But I don't mean women like Margaret Thatcher and Indira Gandhi. Call them women.
I mean women feminine,
creation. That understand their role is to be women and control men. Women will take over and that ring will go to the women and then they'll make decisions with it. But we still have the ring bearers with the third ring and they have no intention of letting that ring go. And by the way, that ring has no redeeming features, but it had to be made. Some people said, why did they make that? I said, simple. Original people, original culture honours evil. We see blessing. Because without evil,
this
planet makes no sense.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you incarnate here, when you finish here and you go back to your maker and say, what did you learn? Oh, fish are lovely. Birds are fantastic. Lovely place. I saw the fjords, great beaches. Yes, but what did you learn? How did you improve your soul? What were you challenged? Oh, I tripped over one day, heard of it. But what injustice did you face? How did you overcome that? I didn't get any. Oh, well, where'd you go?
Yeah.
We bless evil because it challenges us. If we don't have evil, there's no challenge on this planet, so we have to understand it. But the problem is it was supposed to be a balance. The balance is gone. The evil ring has complete control and it runs everywhere. So this change, when the Pleiadians come, the rings are linked into this. The rocks we have are linked into it. The skulls we have are linked into this too. It's all part of the same stories coming at us from different angles. That's why I've become so convinced about the fact there's a change because all these things have turned up with me. I mean, I've got another ring here, which I'll hold up now, this one here.
Oh, wow.
There's my finger on it. Now, that comes from Angkor Wat. Now, as you know, Angkor Wat, the doors there are massive. This is a giant's ring. This weighs 45 times more. And that ring.
Yeah, that looks huge.
It is huge, but here's the interesting part of these strings. There's two of them, and I won't tell you the full story about his coming, but the most important part is this. We know what's in that one, and this one has four of exactly the same elements. It has copper and zinc, copper first, zinc second. Then it has nickel, it has lead and iron, just like this one. But when it comes to nickel, no, this one has titanium. Now, here's the problem, ladies and gentlemen. From a scientific viewpoint, we have a major problem here. Titanium was discovered in 1691 or 1791, but it was first placed in jewelry in 1933, was the first time titanium was placed in jewelry, which means Angkor Wat must have been made after 1933, because this was found
in
the grounds. It was found during the Vietnam War. There were two of them. They were stolen. One ended up in England, one ended up in Israel, and we've got them both. Now, the point with this is titanium comes from a meteor. Why did they put something that comes from outer space in this one? Because it's got a relationship to that. But secondly, nobody in the planet knew about titanium until 1691, and no one put it in jewelry until 1930. So what the hell is it doing in here? What that tells me is that when this was made, they were doing things that we've only just done last century, but they were doing it 10, 20, 50, 100 centuries before, which means whatever was going on here and whatever was going on with these two rings, they both had four of exactly the same elements.
Oh, wow.
We actually believe this ring was formed in Lemuria and then given to the Atlanteans, all three of them were, and then they marked them and they screwed the whole thing up. When they cut this ring, the balance was wrong, because if someone evil wears this, then they become evil. You see, the rings, all of these, not this ring, these two rings
amplify your own fault.
That's all they do.
Yeah.
They amplify what you have inside you, and whatever you carry comes out. When this woman stole this ring off me, and I'm not going into the whole story with that, she had a problem inside and it came out. And when she announces to people stupidly and puts on Facebook, she's going to kill me. We got this ring back. We did get the back. 2 days after I was attacked, someone went down to our house and said, if you don't give it back to me, I'll trash you. Anyway, she gave it back. Anyway, it came back. But she wasn't going to give it back to us any other way. She would have killed us eventually. That's why they went down, because the second attack would have done us in. We were just about done in after the first one. I actually thought I was going to die that night twice, and I got through it, but I knew if they came again, we were done for. So when we got this ring back, it saved our lives. So do I know there's magic in there? Absolutely. And I've got to tell you something. When I first started writing about this ring, I had a real issue about the magic, because I knew that's what everyone was saying. And I challenged the ring on the very first night. I said to it, okay, if you are magic, you can hear me. And I've never spoken to a piece of metal before, because I'm a black fella. I believe that there's magic in the soil and there's magic in the rocks we've got.
Right. But
this is a foundry. This is a foundry. And I have an issue with that. So I told the ring, I don't believe it's magic. I said, if you want me to talk about this and put my life on the line, which I have done again, I said, you better prove to me that night. I demand it has to be done that night. And if you can't do something that I can't rationally dismiss, because I can do that real easy, we all can.
Yeah.
We've all gone to school. We've all been trained.
Yeah.
To deny anything. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I said to it, it's got to be brilliant. Okay, so I went to bed that night and I had it on this string, red string, because that's how it shines, and nothing metal on it. I went, lay down. It was on my chest at the time, and about 5 seconds after I lay down, it started. It was just a throb, like a wave that went through the whole of my body, and it happened every 5 seconds. You could count 1, 2, 3, 4, then it'd do it again for about 10 seconds, stop for 5, and it went on. And it went on for 25, 30 minutes, and it wouldn't stop. And at the end of 30 minutes, I realized I was going to spend the whole night with these waves running through me. I couldn't sleep. It wasn't hurting me.
Right.
And I said to the ring, I'm not questioning it anymore. I took it off because I would have had to sleep that night. And it goes to bed with me every night. It sits on my dressing room table because I protect it, as I do with the other ring, because I believe people steal them.
Mm-hmm.
And that night, at the end of that, well, after those 25 minutes, I realized it was magic. My only question I had left was, okay, it can do it on me, but can it do it on other people at a distance?
Right.
I won't go into details with that one, but I found out that was a stupid question, because the answer is absolutely, and I've seen that anyway.
Wow.
But the moral of the story is the ring was found 5 years ago when that gentleman who I've met said he went up there on a whim. I said, you didn't go up there on a whim? He said, no, I didn't. I said, yes, of course it did. It wanted to come out.
Yeah.
Now, my question, there's only one question left. It's not so much, is it from Atlantis? Because it is.
Yes.
I can tell you now because I already know because some people have made some outrageous offers for it. That's not the question. The only question that should be asked is why did it want to come back now? It's been sitting in there for so long. Why did it decide it wanted to come back? Why did it call that guy? What was the reason for that? And we'll never know for sure, but I know the answer anyway, because this was the time it was supposed to come. The reason that the skulls were found now, because they want to be found. The rings, the Atlantean ring, the Lemurian ring, they've got them. They
the crystals, you know, the Andara crystals and the Lemurian crystals, those things as well. I think all of those things, the rings, all that, I think they're probably showing up now because it's trying to help the increase the vibration, right?
And it's getting ready for when the ship comes.
Right, right.
If the ship comes and then the right things happen, we don't have to learn to turn it on. It will turn itself on.
We won't have to okay.
See, that's the part of this. My job is solely to protect it.
Right.
But pass it on to the women and protect them. That's my role. I have no other role in this. As for me doing magic with it, no.
Now, you said it can be replicated. Can you replicate that ring, basically, and get the same qualities?
Oh, look, I've got a person who asked me if they could do that, and they were going to make up the Ori Chalcum and put in the same constituents today. And I said, no, you can't do that. I said, because if you make it from the same metal and you put the same markings on it, how can I trust the person who then buys it is a good person? Because this goes both ways. So in that respect, no. But I have said to this person, because someone wants to, they can do it. They can make up copies of it. I said, if you were to make it and put it on pure copper, I'd be okay with that, because then people could have the ring and they could acknowledge that it's there, but it doesn't have the magic in it. If it was the other good ring, that would be different, okay? If it's purely good, an evil person would die if they put it on their finger.
Right.
The issue with this is if we made it exactly as it is, no, can't do that. Because that would mean that people might wear that ring and do wrong things with it. So that can't be done. But there is a gentleman in Australia that's very keen on making a copy, and he wanted to do it that way. He said, you can't do that, but I would consider the ring with the same markings in the same position with the same patterns on it being done on a copper ring. And then if people wanted to buy that.
Is the reason for that just because the copper would keep it, it wouldn't release the I guess the negative powers, but it would it still retain some of the positivity or no? It would just
Look, honestly, if you want magic, I'm not selling that to anyone. No, that's not.
Not magic. I just mean for the vibrational aspect, like for
copper, as you probably know, is the most sacred of all the metals. We know that anyway. So that's why I said I'm comfortable with that, which means it'll have a small degree of power within it because it's sitting on copper. But if you want pure power, you'd need the homeopathic drops of the three ones at the right proportions, and you'd need the copper in the right proportion to the zinc and all that. Now, that's not going to happen.
Right.
I have considered this, but I have considered that maybe we could make bowls with those elements in it, and they could bring the bowls. But then if I do that, people might then take the bowl, then fashion it into the ring. So I've thought through that too. So I've gone back to the original, which is to make this out of copper. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen. The gentleman, he's rung me. I saw him at the last talk we did. He came specifically to ask permission. And I said, I can't give him permission for that, but I could consider that. That's as far as I'm prepared to go, because I've seen one person with bad intention and what they did. And I don't want to be yet. I prefer to get to about 85 or 90 and then pass on. I don't want to die the way these rings do it. It's not very pleasant, I can tell you. I don't want to be covered in 30 ticks either. So, no. But we are.
I think for healers and stuff like that, people like myself who do Reiki, and I think there's a lot of positivity that you could use, you know, in the copper way you're saying.
I think that it would have some degree of power, but it would not have one. hundredth the power of what this thing's got right now. But if you had 1/100th the power of this, that would still be manifest. That would still be manifest. Because this ring, primarily, as far as I'm concerned, can
it's
do
it. It's a responsibility to have that ring that you have. I mean, you have to protect that with your life. And I wouldn't want that. You know, I wouldn't want that over my head.
Yeah, and I've also got to protect my family from this too, because what they could do is kidnap my family and they ask for a ring, I give it to them. So, but I've made an arrangement with the ring and my rocks and a few other things, because I have protective powers outside the ring too. Mm-hmm. I was being attacked before. I've got rocks that are the most powerful rocks on the planet. And I've got three out there permanently protecting us. And if anyone curses us anymore, we've been cursed about 5 times. Last person who did this, we put the rocks in formation. Within 2 minutes, they rang us up and said, your rocks are killing me. I said, stop the curse and I'll turn them off. And he didn't. So I left him in formation. And finally, I turned him off and turned him away from him. No, we've got protection for this because I need it.
Good, absolutely.
I've been cursed 5 times in the last 2 years, and I've been on death's door quite a few times. And I'm done with curses. My rocks stop all curses. This ring is for stronger curses. No, I'm not particularly worried about people harming, because I
there's,
actually
there's not too many people who have that sort of power these days, you know.
Look, honestly, I've got rocks that could kill people outright. I've been given rocks that are straight out killing rocks, but I don't use them like that.
Right.
People want, and I actually wrote an article and I challenged people and said, if you want to curse me again, I want to tell you this now. I'll never know about it, because I saved the last guy. And I'm not lying. He begged us. He said, it's killing me. And it was in 2 minutes of me putting him in formation. And he was in West Australia and I was in New South Wales. That's 3,000 Ks apart. My rocks found him inside 2 minutes. They would find anyone in the country that curses us and they will kill him. What I told him in the article is, I won't know next time. If you curse me, I won't be able to save you, because those rocks will just kill you outright. So don't do it. And guess what? Last 4 months, it's the first time.
Nobody's tried.
No one's cursing me. I'm about 80% healthy now. Uh-huh. My son is nearly fully recovered, and no one's touched us, because those three rocks out there, they have got one job. All they know what to do is to kill. I said, isn't it great defending someone for changes and just killing mindlessly? Two of them don't get it. One does. One's got a bit of hope in there. The other two are just nasty pieces of work. So, no.
That's fascinating.
So,
are you still finding things? Do you still do a bit of archaeology around Australia, that, and you're finding things consistently like this?
All the time, all the time. I've got so much. I mean, I've got an artifact up there at the moment which is just sitting above me. I won't show it to you now. We had that one analysed by the top laboratory in the country, and I know the guy personally that runs it. He's a friend of mine, and it's 73% aluminium, 3% copper, and 24% metals that they can't identify that belong to this planet. I've got plenty of proof. The government knows it. That's to an extent why we're somewhat protected, because we have so much proof of stuff that doesn't fit, because nobody in the world makes aluminium that has less than 85% aluminium in it. This is 72%, and you don't make copper and alloy of aluminium, and the 24% of other stuff, my friend said to me, it could be an oxide. No, it's not. We don't know what it is. It's not here. And they know every metal on the planet. They're the top laboratory in Australia. This guy is a world expert. And when he drilled it, it was quite funny. When he drilled it, I was there when they did it, and they were going to chip a bit because they have to analyze it. And when the guy put the drill on it, it just fell off, and he gave him daggers. He said, what are you doing? He said, that's an aluminium drill. He said, I can't get into it. He said, Master, no, I can't get in. They had to get a tungsten tip drill to cut into aluminium. Couldn't get into it any other way, because the other 24%, that's different, because this stuff is quite heavy. Aluminium is light. When it goes in the hand, really heavy.
Right.
Aluminium, put it in cans. This thing, when it hits your hand, it's not like aluminium, but it is, but it isn't. So, look, we've got so much. We've got plenty of proof.
Do you have any things, any stones and things like that have healing properties?
I've got you.
Really?
I got a rock. I've used it on people. I've used it on people with advanced cancer. We're walking around today. No, I've got a rock. It's a woman's rock. It's never It's never been held by a man, and it's never been used to curse anyone. It is purely a bit like Marquis de Grain's ring. Nothing can harm that. And if someone's, I've used it on my wife once when she had a bad back.
Mm-hmm.
She went back to the chiropractor, and he said she was going to be with him for 3 months. He couldn't believe it. He said, "You're completely better. And I saw you 4 days before, and you couldn't move your legs."
Wow, that's fantastic.
I just rubbed it on her back twice. No, we got all this sort of stuff here. But
do you ever take people on digs, like with you? Do you allow people to go come with you and to see things like that?
I take people sometimes. Occasionally, I've taken a few people to one site, but most of our sites, no.
Yeah.
No. I'm happy to show people.
Right, right.
But I'm not happy to take people to places where other people might go there because they might trash the site. They may tell someone and tell someone else.
Yeah, you got to protect it. I understand.
What I do sometimes is when I write articles, sometimes I'll just say it's in New South Wales or it's on the coast. That's all I prepare. Most times I will not give up location because I was never given that right to. And I can't be sure.
You're right. You can't these days. You can't. Yeah, you can't mess around with stuff like that. When I've learned that lesson the hard way with things, but then I'm sure you have too, probably. Now, what do you have anything that you found from Inner Earth or any of those types of areas?
I don't know what the rocks I've got, which I think are our major contribution. I'm not showing you today. We've got, I think, the finest rock collection on the planet of sacred rocks that have markings on them that you couldn't do it today. Honestly, I've had a professor of geology from one of the top universities in the country look at one of our rocks and said, "This is the greatest geological mystery on the planet." Held it for an hour. They can't hold the rocks anymore. The Smithsonian know about one of our rocks and said there's nothing like it on the planet. And they made comments about the fact they'd like to have the rock with them.
Mm-hmm.
And my professor rang up and said the Smithsonian, and he was really happy about it. I said, "Well, are they right?" He said, "You've got to give it to them." I said, "Oh, Christ." I said, "I would rather give that rock to the devil than the Smithsonian." "No, they're not getting the rock." And he couldn't believe it when I said that. No, we've got, and where was it made? We don't know. But I can tell you I've got rocks that we now have evidence that will form in thousands and thousands of degrees Celsius that had to be melted. There's stuff on those rocks that break all the rules. Where they were made, I don't know. But what I can tell you is that the technology involved, because original people are supposed to be stick, stone, and bone technology.
Right. And this is very advanced.
Oh, no. It's rubbish. The original people had all the technology you guys know a long time ago and got rid of it. They gave it up. Because it's trash.
Yeah.
It doesn't work on our country. You see, this planet is one of the
it's killing us. All the technology stuff that we're it's like this 5G stuff. You know, the 5G technology. That's I believe that's going to be part of the downfall of of us.
It won't happen because it won't happen. That's just another reason why it can't happen. This planet doesn't work well with high technology. It doesn't gel with it, and that's the one curse the Pleiadians brought us. They brought us technology. They didn't understand this planet doesn't enjoy it. And that's why every time our technology gets ahead of us, it gets destroyed and we start again. And we've done it four or five times.
Some person comes in and ruins it for everybody else and they take advantage.
And then we go back and we go and become hunter and gatherers and we become magicians and shamans for a while and everything's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And then money turns around and then men take over and the women aren't spoken to anymore and the whole thing falls apart again. And that happens time after time. Men have never learnt their place correctly and this time around they finally will.
Well, that's interesting. What about portals, especially in Australia? What is your thoughts on have you seen any of these portals open or what do you think?
To be honest, I'm so over portals. I've seen so many of them. Look,
people keep talking about portals opening up by LaRue.
Everyone. Look, the portals in Australia, you've got to remember this was the most – they were all – until Whitefield has come here, it's a bit like America. You're American Indians are our closest brothers and sisters. They were living very similar to us. And you've got to remember, they were magicians too, and they were shamans like we were. And we did this together. We understood this back to front. The whole planet worked like that. That's how it used to be. It was no other way. And then all of a sudden it changed. But it was meant to change, because I won't go into the reasons why, but we've made our mistakes here too. No, portals, they're everywhere. Look, right. I was on a portal. We did one time, I forgot about this, while we did a disappearing ceremony. We're taking out the portal.
Yes, but Carrie was telling me about this. So, yeah, that's
right. Yeah. It's a disappearing ceremony, and we had to go out at 3 o'clock in the morning, which I hate, because that's crap for me. And we had to do stuff first, like there was no moon, and it was pitch black. And one of the things we had to do was run through the bush to another spot, and I couldn't see where you're running. And I said to the elder that asked me to do this, man, I'm 63, for Christ's sake, I'm going to fall over. No, you've got to have faith. You just run, and you run in there, and you all go off, and then I'll call you back. You'll come back, and then we'll do this stuff. And we're doing all this crazy stuff. And at the end of it, he said, okay, the portals are now open. And I looked at it and said, oh, yeah, crap. Okay, well, let's see that. He said, okay, fine. He said, I can see one of us doesn't believe this. And I put up my hand and said, yeah, I'm the one. He said, okay, you got Evan to go up there first. And he went and stood in this spot and freaking disappeared. That was quite funny. No one could see him. And then all of a sudden when he comes back, and first of all, this happened to everybody that did it, and I was the last one to do it, of course, but when he comes back, they're about 12 foot high, and then they could drop back in height, and then they come back in. And I was the last one to do it, and I'm just standing here, and I'm thinking, nah, it's not working, because I hadn't disappeared. And I come back to the elders, and I said, didn't work. And they all laughed at me. They said, what are you talking about? None of us could see until he's come back in. So, yeah, look, they're there. They're still alive. I mean, hey, when I put my rocks, my 180-odd rocks, into a sacred formation, that creates an incredibly powerful portal, which we're going to put on country very soon and leave it there for good. There are portals everywhere, okay, and they're opening up all over the place in Australia, and the elders keep telling me sometimes they're open for hours at an end, and people can walk in them. You can't see them, and then they come back again, and I've been in these portals.
Don't you feel like reality doesn't change for the person going into the portal? You still think you're here, but you're somewhere else.
Exactly. I mean, I didn't feel any different. But then the other said the same thing. And I remember saying to Evan, I said, where'd you go? And he said, no, is he standing in? He said, no, you weren't. And it's the same for all of us. And he was just showing us. And this was like a 101 for beginners. I mean, there's a lot more you could do with that. This is just to give people an understanding these things are true. The elder that did this got into trouble because he was showing non-original people.
Secrets, yeah.
And that's why I like him. I know his name. His name's Bob Crombie. Well done, Bob. I like got a lot of time. And he's the main custodian down in Sydney, because even in Sydney, 5.5 million people there, we still got portals there. They don't know where they are, but they're still there and they're still functioning. You can put all the crap you want on top, all the civilization you want, and you think you're going to overlay magic. You never do. They still work, but they went dormant for a long time and went quiet, like a volcano. I didn't say extinct. I said dormant. But they're brewing. All of them are. All the portals are.
There's a lot here in Utah, too, where I am. I'm sure you heard of Skinwalker Ranch. But there's portals here everywhere,
and they'll be opening all over the planet. I want to make a point about this. I'm saying it's Australia is the spark that starts the fire, but the fire goes everywhere, and that's why we're burning first now. This is part of our cleansing. The rock was cleansed. Now the land's been cleansed. It's not a pleasant deal, like I tell you. The fires here are outrageous. I mean,
we have to do that too. Like, will Westerners have to do that as well? To cleanse this part of it, or is it being done for the whole world?
Well, you got to remember, when I take people on country, whenever I take them on country, I smoke them. Yeah. I always smoke them. I won't take a person on country. I had one person that said they weren't going to be smoked. I said, you can go back to the car park. I don't want to talk to him. And I talked to him past that point. Well, anyone has to have smoke on them when they go on the sacred ground. What I don't think people fully understand is what's happening to understand is we're all being smoked. I mean, there are days here where you can't see. They've been going on for months now. We're a bit lucky where we are. Our fires were earlier, but our rainforests have been burning down for the first time ever. There are days where you couldn't see 20 metres in front of yourself. No way. I mean, but it's been worse down in the South Coast, and it's been worse at Kangaroo Valley, which is Ramingeri land, which worries me a lot. Kangaroo Island, rather. The whole of the country's burning, and we can't put the fires out. We have no idea to put them out. And basically, Australia will burn until we have 4 inches. Now, if we don't have 4 inches, I can tell you now, this will go on forever. We just had it flare up yesterday in Kangaroo Island. Now, basically, it went through the rest of the island. The whole of that island, 150 k's by 50 k's, has been singed. But that's small compared to, I think, in New South Wales, we're up to 5 million hectares.
Yeah.
You know, and billions of animals are dead. They're dead. The kangaroos have died. They couldn't outrun it. You see, the problem was this fire was moving at 60, 70 k's. Well, the kangaroos can do 60 and 70 k's, but they can't keep doing it. And sometimes the fires, when there's a 100 k wind, the embers go, 3 k's in front. The kangaroos are running. They go back into another fire coming back at them. They can't get away from it. And the fire is here. We don't go out and put the fires out. What they do is they stand near houses and try and save them. That's all we can do. So we've got no control over this. There's nobody that can put – every other bushfire we've had, we put it out. This one, we can't put out. And the fires are telling us the trees aren't burning. They're actually exploding. They're just blowing up in front of you. And actually the fire is so bad, it's creating its own weather systems. It's making thunderstorms. You know how volcanoes do that?
Yes, yes.
Lightning and thunderstorms because it is so intense. It's the same as a volcano. We get lightning strikes that are taking place that make more fire. And then sometimes it rains, but it makes no difference because when it's raining on top of fire, flames that are 70, 50 metres high, man, the water just evaporates. It doesn't even get to the ground, so it makes no difference. This will continue. The whole of our country will burn until we get – we were lucky. We're in a rainforest here, and about 3 weeks ago, our fires were going non-stop, and we've had them for 2 months. We had 5 inches. We're the only part in Australia that got it, and it put out the two main fires we had here. So we're the only part on the east coast now from basically halfway through Queensland down to Victoria that is actually not on the same colour as everyone else. So we're a bit lucky. We did it 2 months earlier. But for the rest of us...
Well, I wouldn't say lucky. I think it's for a reason. I mean...
everything's for a reason. And it's the smoking of the country. This is like a beginning of the change, I believe. But it's painful. It really is. And it's going to cost out.
There's going to be more to come, don't you think?
Oh, as far as the catastrophe. We had bad fires last night. We had really bad fires last night. In fact, Victoria at the moment, they're in a bad way. I think they've evacuated about 10 towns. And quite a few people now, they just run straight to the beach. It's the only place that's safe because the fires are coming right up to the edge of the beach. So, but the problem we've also got now is we're getting massive respiratory problems. You see, our cities, we're now beating New Delhi for the most polluted cities in the world. Canberra is now way ahead. It's funny how Canberra, the national capital, has got more pollution than anywhere else now. They're 15 times above the maximum level and twice three times what New Delhi gets on a daily basis. You've got to be polluting really hard to beat New Delhi because they're good at it. They really know how to pollute more than anyone else.
That's true. goodness. And we have that too in Utah. We have the inversion over the valley. That's just, I can't even go down into Salt Lake. I live up in Park City in the mountains. But when you go down, you can see it's just this black fog hanging over the valley, and it's just...
Don't worry. Your turn will come. Don't worry. Next summer, your turn will come. Don't worry. It's not going to stop you among the continent. This is not going to finish. I know your fires in California have been pretty bad.
Yeah.
They're not like ours, but they're going to get close. Don't worry. It's going to continue. It's not finished.
So can we protect ourselves, like people like myself, from that?
They can't, man. No, if it comes like that, when you've got 50-metre fires coming at you and they're moving at 100 k's, nobody can, man. We've lost a lot of fires that have been killed and stuff like that, and so many have been so close. I mean, I stand next to it, but no, you can't put it out. You honestly
right.
can't.
No,
what
I
you do is you stand near a house and you put out spot fires. That's what you do. When you get in your house, you try and get the spot fires and get them before they get to your house. That's what they do. They stand around and say, here it comes. Okay, get ready. Get the hoses up. Here's the house. Let's look for the spot fires. And sometimes they can save that, 5,000 times they couldn't.
I meant kind of like what you guys are doing, those little spot fire areas, things like that. Can we do that, things like that to
do the burning we used to do, the blackfellas doing. I'm hoping the article I wrote in Nexus, my plea was this, that we hire 10,000 original people to go out into our bush and burn it each year in winter and burn it the way they did, soft burns, because the way we do it's wrong. My hope is that our government, oh Christ, why do I even think that? My hope is that the people demand that the government say that we don't know how to look after the bush. The blackfellas have been here for hundreds and thousands of years and they do. Let them do it because we can't. That's what we should do.
Yes, yeah.
But and if that's the case, then if you then what we do is you'd send those original people out to the rest of the world and teach you how it is to control this so it doesn't get you. And that's what you should do. But then again, you've got to remember our bush is different.
That gives me a lot of ideas about things, though. You're right. We should be doing that, especially in the West. We should be asking the Aboriginals what we can do to prepare for some of these things, because it's not like I think Americans always think we're exempt from everything.
This will go everywhere. There's one thing you can't run away from. It's in front of you. It's behind you. And it's everywhere at once.
Well, and it's part of the grand design. I believe this is cyclical. And this is, yeah, there's nothing we're going to be able to do to stop it. But those of us who have raised our vibrations sufficiently shouldn't have anything to worry about, per se.
Nothing at all, because it's part of nature. I mean, honestly, there's no point worrying about it because we all die. We all die one day. That's the one thing humans will share. So don't be fearful of it. Just expect the fact that it's coming, because we screwed up.
Yeah.
And the earth will turn on us, and this is part of the deal. You've got to understand, if you keep mistreating your mother, one day she's just going to say, done with this, guys. It's part of it. We can argue about whether it's global warming, whether it's solar flares, or whether it's the Indian Ocean dipoles or whatever. You can argue about it as much as you want, but it doesn't make any difference. It's still going to happen.
And I think people think we still have so much time, and it's like, no, we're running out of time. We don't have this. This will happen in our generation. This will for sure. I believe that. Everything in me tells me this is coming, and there's nothing. We can't put a timeline on it, but I know that in my lifetime, that it will be. You know that this will happen.
Well,
and I feel strongly.
When there's a change, you have to have massive things that remind you there's a change. Well, there's never been. I mean, everyone was upset about the Amazonian fire.
Yes, yes.
Australia, we are at least 30 times bigger than the Amazon. What happened there? It's a small dot compared to the amount of bush we've lost and the amount of smoke we've put up there. The amount of smoke we've put in there, because I know it's got to Chile. And I know it's got to. In fact, New Zealand airports were closed. They couldn't see anything. It was our smoke. It's going to go around the world. Our smoke is going to continue. And by the way, it's still pluming out because it's not going to stop. And then the point is that's a sign, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, people have said it's like hell on earth, and it does look like it.
Yeah. Yes.
And the prophet said, it will look exactly like it is in the prophet's mentioned.
Yep.
Said it would look like that. And now it's there. People are trying to scientifically explain it away. Don't bother. It's there for a greater reason than that. And as bad as it is, it's a sign. Now, what it's done in our country, like I said, is it's made people aware of the environment. Therefore, it's not all bad because we never did that before. Now we're worried about the animals. And the koalas, like I said, we probably lost 80% of our koalas in this fire. And the problem is Kangaroo Island is our only store of purely undiseased koalas. We lost a lot of them too. So we're in a dreadful situation. We've lost so many animals. I would say this fire, we've probably lost 100 species completely that were on the endangered list because they can't outrun this one. If the wallabies and kangaroos can't outrun it, we're done for. Because nothing can outrun them on our country. They're the fastest animals they are. I mean, I've seen them burnt to pieces. And we've got baby joeys everywhere. The wildlife care is looking after baby joeys everywhere because mum's dead.
That's awful.
So it's a black place. Same with the koalas. We've got so many koalas at the moment. It's a change. It's part of this, and it's the reason why the ring's here. It's why the skull's here. It's why the rock's here, because we're preparing ourselves for something new. And all I can say is that everyone's got to get ready. And if you don't want to believe it, that's cool. There's two ways to go. If you want,
I think we've presented enough information. And if somebody wants to find the information as such as it is, as evidence, it's out there. It's out there. They just need to look at it.
Exactly.
You know, and I think most of the community ignores what's right in front of their face because they don't want to. It's scary to confront it, right? So well, they just want to push under the rug. Yeah.
We're confronting it, and a lot of people are saying we've got to save our bush. And if they start thinking like that, our numbers of people who are involved is up.
Right.
You see, it may get, because I know the number, I'm not allowed to say, okay. But yeah. It's a scary number when I heard it, because I said to the elder Simon, I said, shit, where are they? I don't know, they're not here. He said, no, we got to get them. We got to build it up. We don't have enough. We still don't.
And, well, listen, this has been an amazing, amazing talk. Thank you so much for coming on my podcast. This is really, this is, in some ways people won't understand this, but this is exciting for me to hear this because this is, like I said, this resonates with everything that I've thought. So to get that confirmation from somebody else, and I'm pretty intuitive. I can tell when somebody knows what they're talking about, and you definitely do. And this gives me peace in my heart that, you know, that I'm doing the right thing. I'm doing my part for humanity. You're doing your part, and that we can continue to do that, and more people will do their part. And then, you know, that this is exciting for me because it's not all is lost. In fact, having this information is power, right? So,
power is knowledge, and knowledge is power. Yeah, and truth is the greatest you can have. All I can say is that you choose the right way. And your time is short, and if you do, all you've got to do is just be a good. That's just so freaking simple. Just be a good person for the next year. Don't think bad thoughts, and don't say bad things about people. Because when you start talking about someone that gives you the shits, and you don't like them anymore, count how many times you think about that again and again and again.
It's like an addiction.
Bad about you. Yeah, someone says something crappy about you. You agonize over it and think how horrible they are. And you know what's happened is whether what they said's crap, it doesn't mean a thing, but it does because you take it on board. So don't take things on board. Don't worry about other people who say stupid things because that's their choice. That's their right to do that. What you've got
and
to do.
And most of the time it's a reflection of something they have going on. It has nothing to do with you usually.
Always. Always. When a person starts yelling at someone, the person that yells first is the one that has the problem. Always. Right. When someone gets angry, when they throw a tennis racket on the ground, it's about them. It's not about someone else. It's not because the umpire made a bad decision. It's because they make bad choices. That's what this is all about, choices.
Yeah.
And right now we've got to make a choice again.
We do. Yep. And that's, I think that's the key thing that everybody should take away from this episode is, what are you doing to do your part? And question yourself, where are you at in this process? Are you a good person or are you a bad person? And if you don't know, let's start making some choices in the right direction, you know.
Remember, your mother is the earth. That's where we come from. I know you say that someone gave birth to you, and they did. But where did you all come from? You come from the planet. Your mother is your earth, and you've got to treat the earth like it is your mother, and we don't do that. And when we do that again, then we become magic again. But in the meantime, this is the most magic planet on the cosmos. And it's a recent magic, but we lost it. We'll get it back. Once the mother is prepared, we look after the mother, then she'll give it back to us. In the meantime, she's not happy with us right now. And
she shouldn't be. I mean, look at everything we do. Rape and pillage our natural resources to the level that is not needed. It's not needed.
No, and you've got to remember, this is one of the very few planets in the cosmos that has trees. This is considered one of the most beautiful planets in the universe, and we trash it. And she's had enough. So that's what this is all about. Everything we do right now, I mean, we're doing a series of presentations up and down the east coast of Australia. And the one we're going to carry everywhere is a story we call our alien ancestry, what comes next.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically about what we do next and how we prepare for the change. And really,
are you
that's
coming to the States at all to talk about any of these things?
Possibly, but got to clean our own country first, and we've got some
work
to do.
Right.
But I mean, we could
go. If you'd be interested in doing something like that in the future, let's chat, because I'd love to do a series of lectures around, you know, around the States to kind of get this started out here. You know, we're way behind on realizing what's really going on. So
there's a lot of great things about them. They've just, like I said, lost their way. No, yeah. they're not that far behind. And honestly, you're in front of us. You have no idea how backward we are. Don't sell yourself short. you've got some issues, but I honestly think the Americans as a group are far more aware than we are. I know that it goes both ways.
Thank you.
It's not that bad. Honestly, we're the ones who've got to clean up our job first. But no. Look, I need the next couple of months. We've got a lot of things we want to do here. Once we get that started, maybe we'll look at doing something in America. Because we always said if we did ever go overseas, we'd go to America simply because our cousins, our closest cousins, are the American Indians.
Right.
They're our closest cousins. The Hopi, the Navajo, Chinook, a couple of small things. We're on the same line with everything. So, yeah, that's where we would go next because there's an empathetic landscape there. Right. You've got to remember your planet, your country, and ours were the last two. They were the last two to fall to the new way of doing things. And we were the last to go. You were the second last to go. So they're the countries that have still got that link to the old ways that's still there. Right. Some of the other countries, it's gone. But it'll come back. But we've got to start first in Australia, then it'll go elsewhere. So, yeah, that's what we're on about. That's what we're trying to do. And we'll see what happens.
Thank you so much. I'm so, so appreciative of you taking your time to do this. And thank you for everything you do for the planet. And I ask every guest that comes on here this one question. And it's kind of how I wrap things up. But what is your hope and your wish for humanity?
My hope and wish for humanity.
If you could pass along just one message.
Yeah. My hope and wish is for humanity is that we reconnect with the reason we're here, which was to find what magic means. That's what I hope we can do. But the day will come when we start to talk like we used to telepathically.
Yes.
The day will come. I have an elder that disappeared in front of me and Graham Hancock, so I can say that because Graham was there at the time. And I'll close with this. He did a ceremony. He's my main elder. And then he was done up old way, sang the songs old way, walked back a step, then walked back the second step, disappeared completely and stayed disappeared for quite some time, then turned up behind his wife with a big smile on his face. I remember looking back to Graham. Graham didn't have a smile on his face. His mouth was so open he couldn't speak. And I've got to tell you, Graham's quite good at speaking.
Yeah,
he couldn't say a word. And I remember someone said, go and ask him because he's your elder. Go and ask him what he's done. I said, mate, I'm not going to ask him that. No way. He'd ask me four other questions in return. I couldn't do it. I'm not going to ask my elder anything because whenever he asked an elder question, he asked another one. Anyway, the next day someone did ask him and said, how did you do that? How can you do that magic? And he smiled at him and said, it's not magic.
Yeah.
He said, every human on the planet can do what I can do. The only difference is, I know it and you don't.
So what I'm saying is that
every one of us could disappear in front of Graham Hancock and me.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of us could telepathically communicate with everyone so no one could ever lie again. Every one of us could do the things I've seen El Carno do time after time after time when he broke all the laws. That story I told you, I could give you an hour of things he's done in front of me and others. Where you just stand there and you shake your head and say, I just don't get it. After a while, I realized that one of the elders said, when I spoke about that and two other ones, he said, you mean Carno's party tricks? And I thought that was so. Oh, so gosh. I thought it was really a nasty comment, but I realized later, that's all it was. It was a party trick just to remind us of what we can do. So that's what I'd hope, that every one of us could go back to what we used to do. And like I know that an original stories and original belief is that every person born has magic.
Yep.
Not the same amount, but we all have magic. And it is our role, this is how it used to be, to find our magic. That's how it used to be. I want that to happen again, because when we're telepathically communicating, I can trust everybody again. I can't trust very.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything changes when we become magic. Until that happens, until we're magic, we're miserable. That's what I'd like to see happen.
That's magic. Beautiful. Thank you. I love that. I love that you said that. Because we all do have magic inside of us, and most people just don't know it. And we've been, that's part of the programming, you know, that's been done to keep us held back. But if each person just realizes that they're their own worst enemy by not believing, yes, that they can change it, you know, it's that simple. So
magic's
thank you again. And I'd love to have you back on, you know, in a couple of months and kind of see where things are at with you and yeah, talk about some more stuff, as I'm sure a lot will change in just a couple of months. So thanks again so much, Steve. Appreciate it.
Pleasure. Right. Thank you for asking me. I appreciate it. Thanks for your questions. You did a good interview.
Thank you. Okay.